This is Digital Story Podcast number 728, March 3rd, 2020. Today's theme is the Fujifilm X100V Hands-On. I'm Derek Story. The Fujifilm X100V APS-C compact camera has been steadily evolving since I first saw it at Photokina in 2010. Immediately after release, it developed a dedicated following, but there were many, including myself, who remained on the sidelines monitoring its evolution through five generations. Today's camera, the 100V, is the result of 10 years of development, and it's the lead topic in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. There are so many ways for me to talk about this camera, and I've really been thinking about, okay, how do I approach it on today's show? I've been working with it for a number of weeks now, and I have a lot to say, and probably a lot more than I can say in just one show. A similar situation that I had with the EM1 Mark III, right? But I had to pick an angle, so the angle that I have decided to choose are, what are the factors that have moved me from the sidelines of watching this camera evolve since I was first introduced to it at Photokina in 2010 and got to talk to Fujifilm about it, that's moved me from just watching it to actually wanting it in my possession, right? So I'm going to talk about some new features, some improved features, or features that have been around but now combined with the new stuff makes this a compelling camera to have. Alrighty, so that is going to be the angle of today's show. Now, I'm also going to cover a few complaints I have about the camera, or things that I would like to be improved or added on in future editions. And we know that Fujifilm really likes this project, right? We know this because of the way they have lovingly moved it from generation to generation, carefully choosing the improvements that they make with each iteration. So we know that the V is not the end of the line for this camera by any imagination, but I do think it is a camera now for many of us to at least consider for, well, what type of photography? First of all, travel, great travel camera. Street photography would be the second area. Creative photography, and I definitely think that this is one of the more creative cameras that I have shot with in recent history. And then family photography, just a camera to have around for, you know, your family events, your family life, all that kind of stuff. And because now, thanks to its Bluetooth 4.2, it really does interact very seamlessly with your smartphone. I'm using an iPhone 10 in my case, and it's beautiful. I'll talk more about that as I get into the features themselves. So here we are. We're talking about the X100V that was just announced a while back and will start shipping, I think, in about a week or so. I think it's going to be, you know, hitting the shelves, as they say, here very, very soon. All right, so let's see if this camera is more interesting to you if you don't already have one, or if you're really excited about upgrading if you do have one. Okay, let's dig into all of that. The first thing I have to start with, of course, is the hybrid viewfinder, because it's really unlike anything else that I've shot with. And what does that mean? Well, it means you get the best of both worlds. You've probably heard me talk about in other shows how I still like to shoot with DSLRs because I really like a good optical viewfinder. There's nothing like just looking through glass, really nice glass, at the world. The X100V, as does previous versions of this camera, gives you both. And you have a little lever on the front of the camera. And so you can look through the optical viewfinder, which isn't just any optical viewfinder. It has these really nice magical overlays that show you frame lines, show you aperture and shutter speed, you know, show you all sorts of information, and you get the optical viewfinder experience. You move the lever, and then you get an electronic viewfinder. Now, one of the upgrades that's happened with the V, and I'm just going to call it the V now most of the time, is that now we have a 3.69 million dot OLED electronic viewfinder versus the 2.36 dot million dot that we had in the previous one. So they've really upped their game. Now they have a refresh rate for this electronic viewfinder of 100 frames per second. Alrighty, so you get both of these things. And for people like me who like both, this is a real treat. Not having to choose, okay, today I'm going to grab this camera with the optical viewfinder. Today I'm going to grab this camera with the electronic viewfinder. I get to have both. And over the time that I've been shooting with this camera, I have used both. And what I like to do, generally speaking, is I start out with the optical viewfinder, just, you know, for framing and composing and all that. It's really so nice. And then I'll switch to the electronic viewfinder before I make my final exposure, if I have time to do this, and just sort of check exposure compensation, color, and that kind of stuff. I love having both, and it's just one of the features of this camera that has always impressed me, and it's gotten even better with the V. The second thing, oh my gosh, they finally did a tilting touchscreen. So right now we have a 3-inch, 1.62 million dot LCD touchscreen that is the up and down kind, okay? So, you know, it's really nice for flipping upwards so that you can put the camera down at your feet or at a very low angle and look right into the viewfinder. But it also tilts the other way so that you can hold it over your head and shoot that way and still see the electronic viewfinder. And what a lovely viewfinder it is, by the way. That 1.62 million dots, it creates a gorgeous picture. It's very easy to compose on it when you do want to compose on it. So you have not only the hybrid viewfinder that we were just talking about, but you can also compose on the viewfinder itself. And that's where the tilting LCD just comes in very handy. And it's a touch screen to boot. So that is a major upgrade. That is something that I know I have been waiting for through all the iterations. And when I'm out in the world, which is what this camera is designed for, I need that LCD to tilt. They've added it. They've redesigned the 23 millimeter F2 lens. And is now, you see a little series 2 that's engraved on the edge of it. And this is kind of an important thing. They had not redesign the lens during all the previous iterations. It's always been a very good lens, and Fuji makes fantastic lenses. So it's always been a very good lens, although it's been a little soft on the corners, wide open. I think if you had a beef with it, that would be it. This lens is really terrific. It's 8 elements in 6 groups, and the revised design includes 2 spherical elements. And it really does improve the sharpness and clarity, especially when shooting wide open, which, let's face it, a lot of us are shooting wide open whenever we can get away with it, right? Additionally, they added a super EBC coating to suppress lens flare and ghosting for greater control and color fidelity. And the color is absolutely great with this camera. So it's a sharp lens. It performs well throughout the whole range from close to infinity now. And a really nice thing about it is that all of the current accessories from the previous models for the lens, you know, the filter adapter ring, the lens hood, you know, all that kind of stuff. The converters too, right? You have a wide angle converter and a teleconverter. They all work on the new lens. So I really appreciate them doing that. This next one, I have not seen a whole lot written about it, but boy, when you're using it, at least for me, it's a big deal. And they updated the Bluetooth. It's version 4.2 now, and it has real-time, the camera has real-time GPS tagging that actually works. So this is something that I've been teased with on other cameras, and it has worked kind of spotty, to say the best. And what I really have wanted is a camera that when I turn on the Bluetooth and I have the settings set up the way that I want, which is for it to communicate with my iPhone that's constantly, you know, monitoring where I am, for better or for worse, right? but it's monitoring where I am. I want that information to go on the pictures that I'm taking with the camera. And what I've had before is that sometimes it worked or sometimes it didn't, or it took a long time to come on, or all these sort of things. I didn't really have high expectations when I started shooting with the V. And then the first batch where I turned this on, every image over the course of the afternoon was geotagged. It worked on every, it didn't miss any images. It got the first one. It geotagged everything and it did it accurately. And I'm going, oh my gosh, I finally have a camera that works the way that I want it to and the way that it's, you know, set up to do. It's very easy. You can turn it on or turn it off. You can have Bluetooth on and have continuous geotagging for location and time, or just location or just time, or turn it off altogether. It's all up to you. The battery drain, I think, was minimal. It didn't feel like it was making it much different than when I shot with it off. I did one afternoon with it off and one afternoon with it on. There may have been maybe a 15% difference in battery drain between the two, and I can't isolate that variable. Let's just say that I'm sure there's a little bit more battery drain when you have it on, but for me, it is so worth it. And I already got an extra battery for it, so you know I have that with me anyway. But to have all my images show up with geotags where I didn't have to do anything, you know, I just have the camera set for that. You know, my iPhone just automatically is communicating with it because I've already had them paired because I share images and do all that other stuff. And it's one of those things where I can say it just works. And if you want geotagging for your images, then this camera does it and it does it right. And I'm really pleased to report that. For me, for a travel camera, it's imperative. Thank goodness. Thank goodness we have it. Another new improvement is the weather-resistant body. And there has been plenty of discussion about this because for it to really work, for it to be complete, you need to have a filter on the front lens. So if you look at a diagram that shows the weatherproofing for this camera, it is all throughout the camera on the inside. There are a lot of seals in it. I think it's going to be really good. Now, I haven't done a dunk test with it, nor do I plan on doing a dunk test with it. I'm not doing that. I'm just not. You know, we can do it with someone else's camera if we want, but we're not doing it with mine, okay? So I'm not going to do a dunk test, but I did read the specs, and I did see the illustration where all the weather seals are. And what I did was I just got the adapter. So there's a front ring on the lens that you take off. You put the adapter ring in. It looks good. You put a nice filter in, and then you're pretty much weather sealed all the way around. That's, again, one of those things that I think is really important for a travel camera. This is not a camera that I'm going to be using inside all the time or not in the studio or whatever. It is designed to be out in the world. And I don't want to have to worry about it if a few raindrops start falling or if it gets a little dusty or whatever. I want it sealed up. And now, finally, with the V, we have that. By the way, the Fujifilm adapter is a little pricey. What I got, and it's working great, and it looks beautiful, is the Vello, V-E-L-L-O. I'm sure you're familiar with them. The LHF-X100B. And that gives you the adapter, and it gives you a very stylish-looking lens hood, very kind of Leica-looking lens hood. It's metal, and it works fabulous, and it is, I think the two of them together are about 40% of the cost of the OEM Fujifilm one. So if you want that functionality, but you don't want to spend the Fujifilm price for it, the Vello just works fantastic. And I'm using it. That's what I have on mine, and I'm very happy with it, okay? So anyway, yay, weather-resistant body. I'm just thrilled beyond belief. This is right up there with the flip screen for me, okay? Now, another thing I have not read much about, but boy, is it good, or at least it was in my testing, is the built-in selectable HDR, high dynamic range function, in the panorama mode. And both of them are slightly unique in that you have options, which that isn't totally unique, right? A lot of cameras have options, but the options are good, right? And on the HDR in particular, I was impressed at how realistic the HDR was, except for the extreme setting, which then you do get into that wacky stuff. But the HDR 200 and 400 settings in particular look very natural, and they remind me of doing high dynamic range processing with Lightroom. You know how Lightroom is sort of that understated high dynamic range where it kind of gives you something photographic instead of something garish? Well, that's what this camera does with the HDR 100, 200, and 400 settings. They're very natural looking, and in fact, it's easy to use. You just get to it on the drive menu, which is a little button that's next to the viewfinder. And then also it has a slick panorama mode that allows you to do a big panorama or a medium panorama. It's so funny because I'm so used to kind of going slow and steady because I shoot them with my iPhone too. I like panoramas. Shooting with my iPhone, I'm used to kind of going this steady speed as I'm doing it. And the camera was kvetching at me saying, hey, pick it up, man. You're going too slow. You need to go faster. And I finally figured out that because of the processor, the updated processor in here, that I just go vroom like that. Just hold the line and just go at a really good clip. And it nailed it. It nailed it. So I think that's one of the things that showed me how the updated processor is really powerful. And those are two things that I like to have in my quote-unquote real camera. And I want them to work photographically. I don't want them to be toys. I want them to be, you know, real tools. These are. Another thing that it has is high-speed movie mode. Now, I talked about this in the EM1 Mark III. I loved it in the EM1 Mark III. And so I can record in, you know, high speed 120p and then have it play back at 29.97p or, you know, 30p. And I have a lot of different options too for combinations. So you get to pick the high speed recording option paired up with how you want to play back. And it works really well. I'm really happy to see it in this camera. This camera also has very good 4K video. I don't shoot a lot of 4K video, but I did look at it, and it was quite good. It was quite good. I don't really think of this as a 4K video machine, and part of it is because of one of my nits that I'm going to talk about here in a second. All right. In fact, let's talk about them right now. All right. So I have a wish list for this camera. As far as it's come, and as wonderful as it is, there's still a few things that I want in future versions. And the first one is image stabilization, built-in image stabilization. This one, nor none of the previous models have that. Now, I didn't need it for still photography. I don't miss it at all for still photography. I'm shooting basically the equivalent of a 35 millimeter F2 lens, right? Because it's an APS-C sensor. And image stabilization isn't that big a deal for me at 35 millimeters, especially with such good high ISO performance. So I don't really miss it for still photography. And then I do use the digital teleconverter for 50 millimeters on this camera, which I like. The 50 millimeters is quite good. And again, you get full resolution at 50 millimeters when you use it. So I'm shooting either at 35 millimeters or 50 millimeters. I don't use the 70 millimeters very much with this camera. I'm not as impressed with it as I am with the 50 millimeters. The 50 millimeters, the image has basically all the same characteristics as with the pure 35 millimeter version. The 70 millimeter, I start to see some changes just in the characteristics of the shot that I'm not as crazy about. I have used it, I will use it, but I really like the 50, and of course the native 35 is great. So I don't miss it for stills, but for video, and maybe I have just been spoiled after shooting so much with the EM1 Mark III that just has this crazy image stabilization system, especially for video, and especially for the high-speed video that I like to shoot. So that's where I want it, really. I want it for the video. I will be happy to have it for the stills. But if this camera is going to be a serious travel camera for video as well, then I think at some point they have to get image stabilization in there. Hopefully the next one. Now, I read the interview. Some of you may have read the interview. And I think, for them, it comes down to how can they do it and keep the camera at the same size that it is. That's what they're doing. They feel like they have to build the IS from scratch. We'll see what they end up doing. Alrighty. It's got to be in there sooner or later, especially again if you want to shoot video with it. Speaking of video, the other thing I'd like is a standard headphone jack. They have a standard mic jack, but not a standard headphone jack. You can attach a headphone, but you have to use an adapter and use the USB-C port. So I'd love to see just a standard headphone jack in there for the video that I do shoot. And I'm shooting more in full HD. It'd be nice to have that when I'm reviewing it and not have to fool around with an adapter. I'd also like 120 frames per second refresh rate for the electronic viewfinder, which is more than 100 frames that it currently does. And it doesn't sound like a big difference, but again, comparing it to the EM1 Mark III that has 120 frame rate, I do notice a difference. And there is just that slight lag sometimes. So it'd be really nice if they get that up to 120 frames per second in an upcoming model. And I don't mind the single SD card slot. It's a travel camera, it's not my work camera. But I would like it upgraded from the current UHS 1 to UHS 2 slot, especially if you're gonna have 4K video and high speed, full HD and all that stuff on there. It'd be nice to have a UHS 2 slot. So those are the nits, right? So that list is getting smaller and smaller all the time, and I think it's going to continue to shrink with upcoming versions of this camera. Just a few more things I like before we go on to the next story. I know that I want to keep this segment shorter, but it's hard. There's so much here. The programmable front command dial is wonderful. It's a horizontal dial and it's right beneath the shutter button. So your index finger can slide right down to it. And what I've done with it is I've moved exposure compensation, which is on that top dial, which I don't like it as much because you have to use your thumb for that. I'd rather use my index finger for exposure compensation. Again, got used to that with my mirrorless cameras. But with the Fujifilm, you can set that top dial to C, and then you can use that front dial for your exposure compensation. It's wonderful. It works great. I love it, love it, love it. Also, very nice, the flash. The built-in flash is terrific. Fujifilm does such a good job with built-in flash, and it is such a nice thing to have on a camera that's for family, that's for travel, that's for events, so you don't have to carry an extra flash. If you do want to carry an extra flash, there is a hot shoe, and it is with programmable contacts, TTL contacts, and it does wireless flash as well. So it has a lot of options, but I love the built-in flash. It works really well, very natural results, good color. It is good. And I got really turned on to that with the XF10 that I have, and this one is even a tad better. That front lever on the front of the camera for switching between the optical viewfinder, electronic viewfinder, it's brilliant. Really, and it looks cool. It looks really cool. It's one of the things that gives this camera its distinctive look. And then it has a function button in it, and that's what I use to turn on and off face/eye detection focusing. By the way, again, which has really improved with this camera, you have right eye, left eye, or you can do both eyes, or you can just do face detection. You have all the options, and it is legit. It works really well. And I just use that front button. I programmed it to turn that on and off. Another very interesting thing is that the rotating aperture dial, when you're not shooting in program mode, which would be set to A, but when you're shooting aperture priority mode, it has 1/3 click stops. And I can't ever remember having that before. Obviously, I've had full click stops and I've had half click stops, never 1/3 click stops. I mean, this is some camera geekery here that, I truly appreciate. 1/3 click stops on the aperture ring. And finally, I have to say that the film simulations are the bomb. They're really great. And I'm happy that I finally have Acros, the black and white, on here. I don't have it on my XF10 and I whined about it. I have it here, and they also have the Eternal Cinema option on here, plus all the other ones, the classic chrome, all that good stuff. And they're beautiful. there's just, I mean, Fujifilm knows film, and their film simulations are as good as they get in the business. They're really wonderful and really help when you want to be creative, right? When you want to do something a little different. So the bottom line on this camera, the bottom line on the Fujifilm X100V is that it has indeed evolved into a camera that I want to have with me. Outstanding image quality, great detail, wonderful color, unique viewfinder that pleases people like me, has a host of creative functions that will keep me energized about my photography for years to come. It's earned a very high Nimbelocity rating. If you've been interested in this camera and what I talked about today made sense to you, then I would think that if you haven't bought one up until this point, this would be a good jump in. The only thing that I would say that might hold some people back still, they might wait for the image stabilization. For me, that's not a big deal breaker. For some folks, it might be. And I would say right now, that is the only stumbling block between this version of the X100 and Nirvana. Alrighty. Fantastic camera. I absolutely love it. Do you have a film camera that needs a good home? You know, this is top of mind for me because I've had some great conversations this last week with a gentleman from Austin, Texas, and you know who you are, who he and his brother had some great Olympus gear that is just collecting dust, and they are going to donate to the cause here. And his son, actually from Phoenix, is the one that started the whole ball rolling, who's also making a donation. I just want you to know that I value this a lot. Folks who contact me, who have film cameras, who aren't using them, who want them to be used, who want people to, you know, take them and make great images with them. And I have that audience. I have that audience for the film camera shop. I love these cameras myself. When they come in, I take very good care of them. I love restoring them. It's work that I enjoy. And the whole thing is just a feel-good vibe. If you have something that you want to donate, all you have to do is use the contact form on The Nimble Photographer and get a hold of me. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, what you have and how to get it to me. And just know if you do that, these cameras will find their way into loving hands who will use them and cherish them and take great shots with them. I just want to talk about a piece that I put on the Digital Story, I think on Sunday, which is why I want trade shows to survive. And there's a couple reasons why this came to mind. One of them is, of course, the coronavirus, right? That's filling the news cycle right now. You know, that has had such a big effect on trade shows and other big events. It may even affect the Olympics. It may impact March Madness. We don't know. And so there's that going on. And then also the fact that economically it's been tough for these trade shows, tougher over the last few years than it had been in the past. And so I shared the story about Photokina because I read a story about Photokina where, you know, right now they say it's going to be a go in May, but, you know, they're going to continue to monitor the situation. And when I first was introduced to the Fujifilm X100, before it was even released, was at Photokina 2010. And I was there working for LowPro, and I also had a media pass. And I met with Fujifilm, and they showed me the camera. And it was one of the best meetings that I've ever had in the sense that, first of all, I really loved what they had. They knew they had something at that time, but they didn't know exactly what. And, you know, they were even talking about, well, what would you pay for it? And, you know, how would you use it? And, you know, what kind of things additionally would you want with it? And all that kind of stuff. And that meeting gave me so much insight to Fujifilm and, you know, where their passion is and how their thinking works and all of that stuff that I have followed them ever since. And I have previously, before the X100V, I had bought two cameras. I bought the X20, which is a wonderful compact camera that I still have. I will never give it up. And then I also have the XF10, which I shoot with all the time, and I love it. Had I not gone to that trade show And had I not had that meeting and many other meetings that I've had over the years, I wouldn't understand Fujifilm the way that I do now. And I wouldn't get those insights from a web page or from other ways. Just like I watch the way people congregate around certain booths and what they're excited about, that's very helpful to me. All the things that I learn at trade shows that are hard to get off the web per se, I find both interesting and valuable. And I'm really crossing my fingers that Photokina is going to be able to have their show this year, and that some of the other shows that were canceled or challenged are going to be able to rally, and that we'll be able to see them in upcoming years. Because for me, I love the internet. It's obviously a big part of how I communicate and how I make my living, but I don't want to be the only thing that I have. I want these other things as well. So I'm crossing my fingers. If you're interested in that post, it's on the Digital Story right now. And there's a link to it in Facebook. And if you want to comment and share your thoughts, I would appreciate that. All right, a little virtual camera club business. I want to start out, as I do so often, with a big thanks to our Patreon members, and welcome to our new members. We have new members that have just signed up recently, and I just obviously love seeing that. Welcome aboard, and welcome to a group of artists and photographers who really care about what we're doing here and who are willing to support it. Thank you, our new members, for joining us. And a double thank you to our existing members, and especially when I look at some of our members who have been with us for a long time. Wow, you know, that's really sweet. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over to the page, see what's going on, and hopefully you too will sign up in 2020. I want to mention that I have tiles for B&H and Amazon on all the pages of the Digital Story. And the links in the show notes and in the articles are usually affiliate links as well. If you plan on making a purchase, such as the X100V, if you will come to the Digital Story first, either click on our link there that's in the show notes, or just click on the B&H tile or the Amazon tile, and then, you know, navigate over to the camera before you make the purchase. That really helps us a lot, helps us a ton. I totally appreciate it. Doesn't cost you any more at all. And finally, visit our friends at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. I bought a new inkjet printer this week for the house, because finally the one that I had there, 15 years old, was just starting to get a little too crotchety for my taste. So I went out and bought a new printer, and it was really fun. We got a multi-purpose one, not a dedicated photo one, but I did get a Canon, and it's terrific. It's just really nice. Brought home fresh boxes of Red River paper for the printer. And now, you know, before we just had laser there, now we have inkjet there, so we can do photos and documents. And it was just a lot of fun. Again, I get all these warm feelings whenever a printing thing happens. Makes me think of our friends at Red River Paper, who support this podcast, our longest running sponsor, who have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper, and who are one-stop shopping for learning everything you need to learn about inkjet printing. Thank you so much, guys, for standing behind the show. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for... I keep running long or longish on that first segment, but you know, these tools that we're talking about are so good. They're so good, and there's much to say. So I appreciate your patience. Come back and join me next week. I have another great show lined up. Until then, you have a great week. Bye-bye now.